Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have 3 hours to spend together, and the first hour is going to be a lot of fun because we have Steve Probst. And as I say, sometimes you ask me questions and occasionally I can answer them, but the guy who knows all, sees all, and has written all, oh yeah, a lot of books, is Steve Probst. So Steve, welcome back to WGN Radio. Now let me get you on the air. There you are. Hey Steve, how are you?
Well, I'm doing well. Thank you, Raleigh.
All right. So I was just, you know, looking over, of course, all your books, and I always come back to what was the first rock and roll record. And I know you've got so many choices in there, 50 of them, actually. But apart from the historical significance and all that and all the research you did, in your heart of hearts, just you, Steve, what do you think the first rock and roll record was?
That is a heck of a question. And if I knew, no, I got to go with Rocket 88 with Jackie Brenston in 1951. May, number one R&B record, May 1951.
Okay, I'll take it. Now, for me, I thought about this, and I read all the 50s, and, you know, of course, familiar with all the records, but I finally decided that it's what I had thought originally. It's G by the Crows.
Okay, well, that's a good choice.
And the reason I go there is because, to me, you know, this is not, you know, what was the first rhythm and blues record, obviously, which would be a lot earlier than any of that. But in terms of rock and roll, I think that was the first one that had the sound, the precursor of what was to come. It just, here it is, 53, and that record is still being played as an oldie in 65.
True. Yeah, absolutely. And it was a prototypical street corner group, I mean, literally, from New York City. I don't know which borough, but they had the sound that very few, if anybody, was doing at the time. Interesting about that record, the flip side, I Love You So, mm-hmm. which was
the original A side, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the flip to G, yeah, the A side, later was a major hit for the Chantels. So that song had some durability there.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, lots of bands and groups redid G, including the Hollywood Flames and Jan and Dean of mm-hmm. All Acts, you know, in the upcoming the 60s and even into the 70s. So it's a song that wore well because it sold not only for the Crows, but for other popular acts of the day.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and, of course, it had George Goldner all over it. And, you know, he was, as far, you know, poor George. He couldn't stay out of his own way of harm. But he had 13-year-old girl ears. I mean, what he heard was,
really.
It was unbelievable.
When he wasn't at the track.
Well, that's it. Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. That's how Moish Levy, of course, owned it all.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
What I did not know until I read what was the first rock and roll record is I always thought the Crows were a bird group because after all, crows are birds. And right. I learned from you that, no, this came from the southern Jim towns where Jim Crow laws forced blacks to live. And the crows actually came from that piece of history rather than a bird group.
Well, yeah. Bird groups, as we think of them, probably started with the ravens and and then the orioles
sure.
in short order. And then the four bluebirds,
mm-hmm.
which became the robins, which sort of morphed into the coasters. But Johnny Otis told me that he didn't use the four bluebirds name long because it sounded too dark, as it were.
Yeah.
That was Johnny. He was always paying attention to that stuff.
I guess.
So, maybe there was some dissatisfaction among the group members, too. I don't know. I talked to Ty Terrell, but I never brought up the subject. Getting Ty Terrell on the phone was reason enough not to upset the apple cart because he wasn't a real easy person to reach.
Yeah, like I think I've told you before, I used to like to go to the Playboy Club in Century City because he was the bouncer.
Oh.
And I thought he was much more of a hit than anybody else who was there.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's your description of him and his the way he did his job? I mean, physical description.
Well, you know, I mean, there isn't much that you do at the Playboy Club in Century City. So basically, he was somewhere between a rough guy and maitre d', you know, when you get right down to it. But he was willing to talk about the robins and things of that nature. Of course, he was still with the robins when they went on to record for Gene Norman and all that stuff. So he had some good stories. I'll bet you had a lot of them.
Well, I had some good ones, but maybe we should trade them. I'm always interested in pioneer groups like that. I think his real name was Terrell Leonard, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
But can you share one of his stories?
You know, actually, as you say that, I really can't because they're not that I can't do it, but it's sort of like when two people get together and just talking about old times and all that, and nothing where I really say, "Oh man, that's a great story." Because of course, I wasn't trying to write a book or interview him or anything, so it
sure.
was more casual yeah. conversation. But I liked him. I found him to be semi charming.
Oh yeah, he was, And he certainly was willing to share his opinions and his take on what was going on in the day, whether you agreed with him or not.
He was not a Lieber Stoller fan.
Okay. Maybe that's why you stayed with Gene Norman.
Yeah.
Although perhaps being a Gene Norman fan would have its challenges, too. A friend of mine who had a record store in Bellflower, California for a couple of years, tells me about trips he makes up to Neil Norman's house to buy records.
Uh-huh.
And that's sort of interesting, too. I think Neil Norman's sort of a chip off the old block in terms of, you know, how he
interesting
does his deals. Let's put it that way.
No, the only thing I knew about Neil is he loved like space music, you know, like all those kind of themes. Yeah.
You're right. I have a record, it's like March of the Star Wars, something, sort of a rare record.
Right, right. And, that's what floated his boat, no doubt about it.
he has some interesting, he put out some interesting singles recently, I guess, because they were in a batch acquired by this guy who ran a record store, and it was like some swamp rock, you know, Cajun music, and a pretty wide range of different types of approaches to music. I don't think these will ever appear on any charts, but maybe they're
they're collector's items anyway. Yeah, Neil Norman and his Cosmic Orchestra, but Gene was an interesting guy because he had everybody from Renee Touzet to the Seeds. And
yeah,
in fact, the way I met Neil, I had not known Neil. I knew who he was, obviously. I knew his dad. But I got a call one day from Neil Norman that basically said, "Who are you?" And I said, "What?" He said, "Well, I'm going through our records, and we have this one CD. It's a CD single, and it's El Loco Cha-Cha, and Julie is her name. And it's your record. It's all about you. What's the deal?" I said, "Well, Julie is her name was my theme song, and El Loco Cha-Cha, of course, became Louie Louie. So Gene right. decided so many of my listeners called him wanting it that he put it out." He said, "Well, we sold a lot of them."
Well, all right. So did he think if you
went? No, of course.
Counted his... Okay, well, then that must be the record business.
Yeah, right, and that was just fine. I thought to myself, oh, you have no idea how many we pressed that we gave away as contest prizes. So it was it was all was fair as far as that goes, but it was so odd for somebody to call basically, "Who are you?"
Yeah. Who are you? Oh, I've gotten calls like that before, and I just generally make up a good story. No.
You're right.
I've got nothing to hide, believe me.
Well, you've written it all in your books.
Well, yeah, I've got quite a bit of experience dealing with records and having records dealt out from under me, and inviting people into my home that I wonder why, you know, I would ever contemplate that under any other kind of existence.
Exactly, that's right. That's right. Where you fumigate afterwards. No, I got that.
Yeah.
All right.
Excuse
so
me for the cough, sorry.
You betcha. So we're talking to Steve Probst, and Steve has written it all, starting with those Oldies But Goodies, A Guide to 50s Record Collecting, and that was back in 1973 when the 50s weren't that long ago. But believe it or not, people are still collecting 50s records and more, and I was just referencing those old school records, and it's a thousand selected R&B, rock and roll, and soul 45 RPM singles that we've talked a lot about, and it's just wonderful. But again, that argument settler, or maybe it'll be that argument causer, I don't know, what was the first rock and roll record, just one of many of which Steve has written. And as I say, if you've got questions, well, Steve is the guy with answers. So 888-876-5593, that's 888-ROLLYE, and Steve will be here until, well, for the next half hour or so, until top of the hour, and the deal is that many of you will call an hour from now and say, "Oh, well, I meant to call." Don't mean to call, get on the phone now. 888-876-5593. So I was wondering what Steve and I would talk about tonight. Not that I run out of topics. That never happens when it comes to talking with Steve. But it was Nick last night who requested something, and that caused me to say, "Oh, we're going to talk about that." So I'll leave it right there. You'll hear the request, and maybe you'll know what we're talking about. But I know that Steve will, coming up on WGN Radio.
Betty, my love, your letter is kind. Betty, my love, though I'm to blame. I'm sorry I stayed away so long. I was in trouble.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and of course makes you think of Eddie, my love, which it should, but interestingly, if you knew the Teen Queens, you know that they were sisters, one of whom was Betty Collins. So we've got Steve Probst, and obviously that wasn't the first answer record, and actually far from one of the worst, but I was thinking about it, Steve, in terms of what R&B record spawned the most answer record, and I have to think that it somehow is involved in the Annie group. What do you think?
That'd be a good guess. But getting back to Betty My Love,
yeah.
Originally it was supposed to be a tribute, one of many tribute records to Johnny Ace.
Right.
But by the time Betty My Love came out, the Johnny Ace tribute record market had sort of dried up, so they had to make a quick switch to Betty My Love. But, of course, a male group like the Cadillacs singing about Johnny My Love might be... might be just possibly problematic in 1955. What
well,
do you think?
You know, it's hard to say because that Johnny Ace, and of course still to this day we wonder about that death, but the answer records to that are some of the worst ever. I mean, there were so many. They weren't really answer records, but the tributes to Johnny Ace, it was just painful.
Well, Johnny's still singing and...
Yeah. Right.
Why, Johnny, why?
Yeah. How's that? Yeah. No, exactly.
Pat Boone should have recorded. Getting back to Annie, which is one of, subject that we could talk all night about, and maybe we should. Annie's Answer by the Eldorados.
Sure.
Hank Ballard had his own answer records. Of course, Roll With Me Henry, to a certain degree, was an answer to... Annie's series, Work With Me, Annie. Thus, that's sort of like branching out into the various Henry records. So we got Annie and we got Henry, and who else joined the parade? I don't know, but...
Well, you're right. Yeah. Mostly it was Annie and Henry, but it's interesting because these were not even answer records at this point. They were sequels, or you might say soap operas, because we got into Annie Had a Baby and Annie's Answer, Annie Pulled a Humbug, and on and and then, like you say, you got into Henry, and of course Henry's got flat feet, can't dance no more. It was just hilarious.
But another sort of a soap opera was the various Shirley and Lee records, starting with I'm Gone, and then Shirley's Dream, or was it Lee's Dream, and Lee Goofed, and all the way to them getting married. So Shirley and Lee, and then, of course, there was before that, it was Little Esther and Mel Walker. They had a whole bunch of records that sort of detailed an ongoing relationship in 1950 under the aegis of Johnny Otis and his orchestra. So the Annie series, the Annie and Henry series, is not unique, but it's certainly worth following. And my God, what was... I don't know if there is such a thing as the final Annie record, because a new one could be coming out any minute now.
You're right about that. It could. And, of course, then you had groups that answered their own records, and everybody loved Can't Do 60 No More. But the Dominoes didn't go much further with that particular theme.
No, that's true, and maybe it's for the best.
Heard that.
Yeah, answering your own records. I mean, getting back to Rocket 88, there was My Real Gone Rocket by Jackie Brenston. He answered himself.
Right.
If you wanted to compile a list, and why should you, you could come up, I think, with dozens of examples of records generating answers. And sometimes the answers were more successful than the original concept, although I can't think of
it. Yeah, I was going to say, think of one, because most of them, I'll go with, you got to be kidding me with that. And of course, in some ways, as resplendent as R&B was, it didn't really hold a candle to what happened in country. So I probably know the song I'm already thinking of, but we'll get there and much more. And if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. And Steve Probst knows all and he'll tell all. So Steve Probst has written a number of books, and we've put them on Raleigh.net in the past, all of them. But most of them are available on Amazon and stuff like that. So absolutely, if you are interested in especially some of the obscure soul songs that I just live for, Steve's written all about them. All right, we'll find out what's going on in the news and get right back to you on WGN Radio.
You wouldn't read my letter if I wrote you. You asked me not to call you on the phone.
But there's something I'm wanting to tell you. So I wrote it in the words of this song. I didn't know God made honky-tonk angels. I might have known you'd never make a wife.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that's Hank Thompson. And if the melody sounds familiar, well, there's a lot of reasons, including the Answer record that came out in, as well in 1952. The lovely Kitty Wells.
The jukebox playing the tune about the wild side of life. As I listen to the words you are saying, it brings memories when I was a trusting wife. It wasn't God who made honky-tonk angels.
Yes, indeed, but it didn't start there. It's usually known as the Great Speckled Bird Mess, going back to the biblical quote in the fundamentalist-modernist controversy, and Roy Acuff in 36 wrote a song called that, but it actually goes much further back. Thrills That I Can't Forget in 1925 was that melody, but the one that most people remember, who remember this stuff at all, the Carter family in 1929 had I'm Thinking Tonight of My Blue Eyes, and so that was done and done again, and I was trying to think, we're talking to Steve Probst, of course, author extraordinaire. I don't think there's ever been a country version of that, but there probably should have been.
Well, I'll tell you what, I was listening to the Kitty Wells version, and of course, when you hear that, you also think of a song called Wild Side of Life, as recorded by the great, as my opinion, of course, the great Freddie Fender.
Yes.
Was for him, my God. So, you know, that song's had many incarnations. I do have a Hank Thompson story, believe it or not.
Oh, good. Let's hear it.
Okay. I write for a small newspaper in Long Beach, California called The Beachcomber, and as part of my compensation, I'm able to place an ad in the classified saying, this guy will buy your records,
yeah,
but they can't be big hits. They have to be things that nobody's ever heard of. Of course, then people call me up and want to sell me their Elvis Presley.
Right.
But this woman who was in charge of donations at Long Beach Memorial Hospital back in the day,
yeah,
she claimed to be the widow of Hank Thompson, and she had autographed 45 of, it wasn't Squaws Along the Yukon, it was one of his better records, though, and sheet music, could have been Squaws Along the Yukon, and sheet music, and 78 acetates, and she just sent them to me because they had been donated by the woman, but apparently they were offered in fundraisers, but nobody picked up on it. So they still were languishing in her closet, and she had nothing to do with them. So I got to talking with her and wanted to know more about Hank Thompson's widow, because at the time she made the donation, Hank Thompson was alive and kicking and still recording.
Well, that's what I was going to say. He died in, like, 2007.
Yeah, I wondered how come he was deceased.
Yeah, this is where I was going with that. So what'd you find out?
Well, I had to draw the conclusion that he was dead to her. You know, as they say, that's the only conclusion that I could draw. But I still have the autographed Hank Thompson record. And then subsequent to that, I found I was in one of my favorite stores here in Long Beach and came across Alabama by Cowboy Copas.
Sure.
Carefully, and there was a pencil Cowboy Copas autograph in that, so I paid it took to get that. I mean, how many Cowboy Copas and Hank Thompson autograph records are floating out there? Maybe a lot, but I have my share.
Absolutely. Well, do you have a favorite Hank Thompson?
What was the was it Rockin' in the Congo or something about the, or squats along the Yukon. Might be considered slightly politically incorrect these days, but back in the day, it was a good seller for him. Let me put it that way.
Oh, it absolutely was. But even as recent as 1969, that was my favorite. Do you remember I See Them?
No, I don't remember that.
Oh, it's a perfect country drinking song.
Well, I'll put my Hank Thompson collection up against yours any day of the week.
You'd win.
Don't tell me they're not there.
I see them, I see them.
I see them everywhere. Those little green men hang around my den, and I sometimes wonder why. With the shaggy hair, they sit and stare when my doggone bottle goes dry. Gonna have some fun, try to catch me one, so a sneaky doodled up behind. I said, alakadab, made a lightning grab, came up with a bottle of wine.
So if that's not country, I give up. But yeah, that's good old Hank.
That's Hank, and, you know, I'm sure they've got a lot of jukebox plays.
Okay.
One record that there was a bar in Sunset Beach, and in the jukebox was a copy of I Got Loaded by Peppermint Harris.
I love that song.
Always trying to shake down the owner to get that, but he wasn't giving it up. The only other place I saw another big drinking location was Avalon on Catalina Island.
Right.
They also had I Got Loaded in their jukebox. So. You know, there's places where amateurs drink, and there's places where professionals drink.
Yeah, that's right. Those with tradition and history and experience, you betcha.
Right.
But, you know, of course, everybody who thinks of Peppermint Harris thinks of I Got Loaded, and rightfully so. It's a wonderful record. But later, I'd say, 15 years later, did you ever hear Wait Until It Happens to You?
No, what label? Do you remember the label?
I have to. I'll look it up in a minute. But I've got it on a 45. But this is. I'll play a little bit while I'm looking that up. Don't go away.
Okay. Fine. Yeah,
you took my love and did it done me wrong. Still was satisfied. Still like my name all the time. Ain't a shame the way you lied, but it's all right.
It's all right.
Any way you do,
it's all right.
I can't tell you how bad I feel. Wait until it happens to you.
Yeah, all right, it was on Jewel. I should have known that. Stan the Man, Shreveport, Louisiana. Yes, it was.
That has echoes of... Fever in it, and Daddy Rolling Stone.
It does. It absolutely does. Now, of course, none of those are the credited writers. Of course, the Lewises were credited with writing that, as you can imagine, Mr. and Mrs. But I thought that was great because that was like, you know, at least 15 years later, and I thought he still sounded great.
Yeah, that's a solid record on Jewel.
Yep.
Ron and Jewel out of Shreveport.
Yep.
The home of Susie Q.
Right, and Paul Up Records, of course, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, 728 Texas Street. For a while, he was the biggest customer of the post office in all of Louisiana because that mail order from Stan's Record Shop on 28 Texas Street. Yeah.
Sounds like Randy's Records in...
In Gallatin, yes. Well, Randy's and, of course, the guy who owned Excello. Why can't I think of his first name now? Downtown... Ernie Young. Ernie's Record Mart, downtown Nashville. Yeah.
Yep. God. Back in the day, I bet you could go... You know, like Peacock Records in...
Don Roby, yeah.
Would have, I'm sure they would have just like stashes of the stuff, and you could probably go there and negotiate your own deal. But we get smart too late in the game, you know, to really take advantage of these things. You know, Excello, what a great role. You know, more than Slim Harpo, although he floated their boat for a long time.
Oh, absolutely. But no, that whole north side of Nashville, you know, everybody always thought about Nashville being country music, but that whole north side, the Ted Jarrett stuff, like Referee Records and things like that, were just terrific, and Excello was the best.
Well, I talked to Ted Jarrett once.
Really?
Yeah, I asked him about the budget records he was putting out, because he was the Spar label, and I can't think of the other one, but Spar was it was sort of like a variation on the Tops or Broadway label.
Right, and, exactly.
But they were, you know, some of those performances were really good. They stood up well to the originals. People try to get as many people as try to get Dora Hall records, which is and based on all unto itself. There are people that are trying to collect Spar records. So there is nothing in the vinyl universe that is immune to being sought after by somebody. Most of them are not in mental institutions.
Right, right. No, but he was wonderful. And, you know, I mean, he died about, 20 years ago now or something. I mean, it's been a while. But he did a lot of stuff. He produced and wrote You Can Make It If You Try for Gene Allison. And, you know, that alone made him some money. Although, believe it or not, he came from money, which was interesting. He was born into a very prosperous African-American family. And
I didn't know that. Probably just as well I might have asked him about it, and he might not have appreciated it. But Ted Jarrett was, you know, he was an entrepreneur, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he was a disc jockey in WSOK back in the day. So you betcha. And it was 55 that Webb Pierce recorded one of his records, so which I think went to number one, Love, Love, Love. So, you know, there was a lot of that. But, you know, I'm thrilled that you got to interview him, because most people don't remember or ever knew who he was.
Well, I've interviewed dozens of people that nobody ever heard of.
That's why it's wonderful. And you've written about them, too. We're talking to Steve Propes, and we will talk more about his books. And Sally is calling from Peoria. We will get her question for sure. But right now, of course, time for me to talk about the Sea Crane Company. If you listen to this show, I know you love radio. And if you love radio, you should know all about the Sea Crane Company. You know, I always say that Bob Crane's radios all have the best reception, and that is what separates them from everything else, both AM and FM. But that's also true with his Wi-Fi radio. And you're saying Wi-Fi radio has reception? Well, not like AM and FM. But the bottom line, if you have a Wi-Fi radio, it has to connect to your wireless access point. And depending upon how sluggish yours might be, well, maybe that's a challenge. Well, I'll tell you what, with the CC Wi-Fi 3, it will connect to virtually everything. It's just great. But more than that, there's no learning curve. I say that because I plugged one in, gave it to John, and he was fine on my show in minutes. It's that easy. And the audio is terrific on it. It is easy to use. Comes with a remote control as well. And if you don't have a great Wi-Fi radio, this is the one to have. Now, the neat thing about it is it gives you literally tens of thousands of radio stations and streams and podcasts to listen to that you otherwise would not hear. So, as I always say, thank God they didn't have this in 1958, or I never would have left my bedroom. But you can check it out at ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com. If you can't go online, you can give them a call. But if you can't go online, you probably don't want a Wi-Fi radio. However, maybe you've got some questions, and they'll answer them. And they'll send you a hard copy of the catalog, too, if you want them. And that's 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE. But your best bet is go to ccradio.com. Yep, that's right, Wi-Fi radio. No ads on stream, no monthly fee, no apps, signing up for nothing. You just have the world at your feet. So check it out, the CC Wi-Fi 3 from the Sea Crane Company. You tell them Raleigh sent you on WGN Radio.
I found the love that my heart has been longing for. I don't have to shop around. Put me down.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Those are the Mad Lads on Volt 1966. You can decide whether it's an answer record or not, but actually, regardless, it was a pretty good song all the way around. We're talking to Steve Propes. So, Steve, you're writing for the paper in Long Beach. Any books going to come out that you're working on?
Yeah, I am actually working on a couple of books, but it's gonna be a a while before they come out. I'm trying to concentrate on books about L.A. R&B and L.A. rock
yes.
and roll.
Yes, yeah. Yes, okay. I'll hurry up because I want to make sure I'm still alive when you get them out there. But
yeah, you and me both. I was looking at my interview with Ted Jarrett since discussing it. He said that he met Larry Birdsong, who was in reform school on weekend leave, and he was able to sign him at age 21, and he had a hit with his first record on Excello.
Yeah.
Then VJ Records wanted Larry Birdsong, but Jarrett told VJ Records, if you want Larry, you have to take Gene Allison, too. And they didn't want to do it, but they went along with it. And, of course, Gene Allison is the guy
yeah.
that had most
yeah.
of the hits.
Exactly.
Well, that's a little bit of the compressed Ted Jarrett interview right there for you. No worldwide exclusive.
Well, no, that's great. Well, you know, VJ was kind of famous for that. They didn't really want the Beatles, but they desperately wanted Frank Ifield. So you just never know.
And there's a Platters and the Penguin story.
Right, well, oh, my God. Yes, yes. Isn't that the truth on Mercury? And, remember that so well because a guy I had worked with for years at Billboard was involved in that at the time at Mercury. And, yes, they did not want to take the Platters, but they wanted the Penguins so bad. Penguins never had another hit.
Well, they didn't. They were the prototypical one-hit wonder, although they did some great records as follow-ups, including some of them on Mercury were sort of didn't need to be recorded, but opinion.
Well, you know, it's interesting too that I should stop talking right now and get to Sally because I don't want the hour to go away. So I'll get back to that if we have time. Sally in Peoria, welcome to WGN Radio.
Well, hey Raleigh, and hi Steve. I don't
hi.
Know if my question fits in with what you're doing, but. Back in 58, 59, I lived down in Louisiana, and on WNOE there was a disc jockey named John Stone, and he made a record. One side of it was Mirror, Mirror on the Wall.
Uh-huh.
The other one was Make Sure, and I could never find it in the stores. I don't know if I had to buy it directly from him. He may have said, but, you know, WNOE kind of dropped their power at night when I lived in Slidell,
uh-huh.
and it wasn't always as clear as it was in the daytime. So, but I wonder if you heard of that record, Steve. And now I
John,
heard some of the
John Stone.
Yeah, he did. What was the title?
Mirror, Mirror,
Mirror, Mirror on the Wall, sure. and Make Sure.
Well, there was a John Stone on Ace Records, which, of course, was the major label in the area at the time. Mirror, Mirror was done for Specialty, Johnny Stone.
Right.
And the Specialty 663, flip side, Be Sure. Never heard it. But it's
I can actually play that. But the interesting thing is I was going to look. Do you want to buy it, Sally?
I would like to, but I don't know how to get it.
Well, let's see what, you know, Disco's sells everything. You probably go there too, Steve. It's one of my weaknesses. I buy half the stuff I see there. But anyway, let's see how much this is, if it is. Let's
Johnny see. Stone.
Yeah, Johnny Stone, right, exactly. Okay, Be Sure, all right? So you can get a copy of 45 for $12.99. That's kind of pricey. Let's see what the shipping is on that. No, it's just $4.75. So for $17.74, you can have a very good plus copy.
Yeah, it's not shipped from Italy, is it?
No, absolutely not. It's shipping from the United States.
Oh, that's a relief. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've gotten good deals on Discogs lately, so I'd recommend that. Yeah.
Me too.
Go for it.
I've been filling in that golden era of doo-wop series, you know, with every label, even labels I don't know that I have a record on. I'm buying the CDs because they're selling dirt cheap.
Mirror, Mirror reminds me of John Fred and the Playboy Band.
Right.
He did records with titles like that.
Right. All right, Sally, I will find this. I will play it for you. But if you go to Discogs, it's DISCOGS.com. Just put in the search Johnny Stone, Be Sure, or Johnny Stone, Mirror, Mirror, and it will come up.
Thank you, Raleigh.
All right, good deal. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
And I can't believe the hour is up, but that leaves plenty of stories for next quarter. And Steve, I can't wait to hear more about the books when you're ready to talk about them.
Okay, I'll be ready next time. So,
all right.
Conversation. It's always fun.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. All right, so that's where we'll pick it up next hour with whatever is on your mind. Anything goes, and I promise I'll tell you all about the Hang On Sloopy thing that I started to talk about last night and ran out of time on WGN Radio.